The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
My next guest has been at the forefront of investigating disinformation, conspiracy theorists and online hate. In 2020, she became the BBC's first disinformation and social media correspondent, and she spent the years since trying to navigate what she calls conspiracy land. Her job means that she faces threats and abuse online on a nearly daily basis, and she's documented the experience as well as first-hand stories of unraveling conspiracy theories in a new book which is called Among the Trolls, My Journey Through Conspiracy Land. And she joins me on the line, Mariana Spring. Good morning.
Good morning.
First of all, the BBC logs kind of threats to people made to all their staff. And if they had a top 20, you're at number one.
Yeah, I don't think it's one of the charts you really want to be at the top of. But yes, I very much have become a prime target for hate, abuse, threats. And, you know, when we're talking about abusive messages, we're not talking about legitimate criticism or someone saying, I don't like you very much. We're talking about some of the nastiest hate, really, often gendered slurs or people saying they're going to come and get you. Really not very nice stuff. And I mean, part of why I get it is because very much my job involves delving into the worst parts of social media, really, and trying to uncover and understand why people behave how they do, the real world harm that trolling, conspiracy theories, algorithms can cause, and what it all means. And I believe a lot in actually going and meeting people face to face and asking them difficult questions or figuring out what's happening. And that kind of process, I think, is part of what's made me a bit of a lightning rod for the trolls in particular.
In the introduction to your book, you go back to when you were just 5 years old, when something very significant happened.
Yes. So the first major news event that I remember happening was the 9/11 terror attacks. I was walking back from my primary school with my mum, and I just couldn't understand it. And I remember asking her lots of questions because she said, oh, you know, this terrible thing has happened. These planes were flown into these buildings. And I couldn't get my head around how it was on purpose or deliberate. I thought, well, it must have been an accident. And I often think back to that moment, not only as a moment when I realised how interested I was, I don't know if interested is quite the right word, but how kind of captivated I was by trying to understand what's going on in the world around me and explaining it, which is part of why I wanted to become a reporter. But also because I think in some ways that not being able to understand why something so terrible had happened is actually the reason why at least some of the people I speak to truly believe conspiracy theories. I think that the kind of stories they spin are easier sometimes than reality. And also, let's not forget that 9/11 became an absolute sort of hotbed for conspiracy theories.
I mean, it kind of was the daddy of all modern conspiracy theories, wasn't it? That the buildings were deliberately knocked down, that the whole thing was a contrivance by government rather than by the hijackers themselves, and so much more, so much more. So then, as you became a journalist and you obviously came across these various daft things that people believe in, there's a kind of a hierarchy of conspiracy theorists. They're the people who create them, I suppose, and then those who follow.
Yeah, I think it's important to try and kind of unpick the way this world and almost industry works when it comes to conspiracy theories. And there are different people who are part of that. So in the book, I really try and break down the different roles that people play. You've got, you know, the people who are in some ways the leaders. I often refer to them as the non-believers with a question mark, because they're benefiting in some way, usually from spreading conspiracy theories. Maybe it's financially, maybe it's through some kind of gaining power or followers, or they feel important. And then you've got the people who are the followers, the devoted people that actually often really believe this stuff, and they are financing those leaders. They're the people who are subscribing to them, going to their talks, coming along to their events. And there are people who kind of sit in the middle as well, who are both kind of devoted followers and then become themselves leaders. And it's important to obviously hold all of these people to account for the harm that the conspiracy theories they spread can cause. But it's also I think certainly when it comes to the followers in particular, important to try and understand what's happened here, because I view them in some ways as victims of all this too. They fall victim to the leaders who mislead them and convince them of stuff that's just really not true. Yeah. And then also of social media, where they're often spending lots and lots of time.
Yeah. Now, there's misinformation where people can actually quite accidentally get things wrong. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, that whole thing is you whisper something to the person next to you and they whisper it again. And by the by the time it reaches the end of the line, it's a completely different message. And that's kind of misinformation. Then there's disinformation where, you know, someone deliberately sets out to mislead.
Yes. And I think, you know, often misinformation is more common than you'd think. You know, people share something, maybe they post it on a group chat or they post it on their social media profiles because they think, oh, is this true? Is there something to this? And they kind of unwittingly become a vector of misleading information, mistruths. Disinformation is, yeah, when I often think the D is helpful because it makes you think about how it's deliberate. It's something that's done because someone intends to mislead or cause harm. And when we talk about, you know, people deliberately spreading conspiracy theories that are harmful and wrong, you know, stuff like, and when we talk about conspiracy theories, I'm not talking about legitimate concerns and questions people have, or, you know, powerful people doing bad things, which happens all the time. I'm talking about people who believe that COVID-19 was a hoax, or that terror attacks never really happened, that they were staged, or that wars and climate change are all a hoax.
Let's give an example of some of the things that are going on. For example, at the beginning of your second chapter on the non-believers, and you say, what if someone told you that the worst day of your life had never happened? And that's what internet trolls told Martin Hibbert, who survived the terror attack at Manchester Arena on the 22nd of May 2017, when 22 people were killed and more than 1,000 injured when a suicide bomber exploded his device in the foyer at the end of the Ariana Grand concert, despite the fact there are people who say it never happened. That explosion never happened.
I know. I do think of all of the conspiracy theories that I've looked into, that is perhaps one of the most shocking. Martin's life and his daughter Eve's were entirely changed that night. They sustained life-changing injuries, and many other people lost their lives. For them, you know, trying to process that, recover, rehabilitate, and then to face, you know, conspiracy theories, essentially attempting to deny that, and also to face trolling and hate. And then also, you know, in the case of Eve in particular, one conspiracy theorist who admitted to secretly filming her to try and prove her injuries were faked in some way. I mean, it was really up there with some of the most extreme tactics I've ever come across. And, you know, I think that's really important to understand here, that we sometimes think of this as a bit abstract, but actually a lot of disinformation affects very specific people.
Now, sometimes, you know, the news itself every day, are you there? Yeah, just seemed to have lost her there, because I want to talk about another case that she mentions, and this was Nicola Bulley. As you know, she disappeared and was ultimately, it was explained, but I want to go back. I was going to talk to you about Nicola Bulley and how all of that evolved from, you know, television coverage of a disappearance. And I suppose we'll maybe talk about the Princess of Wales in a moment, where, you know, the conspiracy theories are having a field day. But going back to Nicola Bulley, mm-hmm. and the collateral damage that the coverage and then what followed caused.
Yeah, so when Nicola Bulley went missing over a year ago now, and, you know, was the inquest found that she drowned in the river close to where she'd last been seen. I'd never seen anything like it, in terms of, obviously, there was this, you know, mass proliferation of speculation, but then speculation that tipped into conspiracy theories and totally false claims. And not just that, but people actually turning up to film, to take pictures, to quote unquote sort of investigate at the scene. And they were trespassing, they were, you know, defaming people close to her, they were causing really serious distress to the local community. And I think for me, it was a moment when I realized the ability that social media has to distort our perception of what's okay and what's sort of socially acceptable. And if you think about it, you know, most of the time we get our cues from what's, you know, how to behave from the people around us. But, if you're watching TikTok videos or social media videos and they're getting millions and millions of views and your videos are getting millions and millions of views, it validates and encourages behaviors that we perhaps otherwise would have considered not okay. And, you know, I got in touch with TikTok about all of this at the time, who said, you know, they prioritize protecting users over money and that they, you know, aim to keep everyone safe. But ultimately what happened there was just so distressing for everyone who knew Nicola, and even actually also the people who ended up behaving in a way they really, really regretted.
Yeah. I mean, there were all these amateur sleuths who had theories as to what happened to her and so on. And this was very distressing for her family. I mentioned there the Princess of Wales, Kate Middleton, and, you know, even mainstream media. I saw in Vogue, for example, a discussion about the conspiracy theories surrounding her. So by our own kind of gossipy curiosity, we all feed into these a bit.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that is exactly how conspiracy theories always work, which is people feel as though there's an absence of information or they can't make sense of what's going on. And so they kind of fill that void, that gap with more speculation and more, you know, even when the palace comes out and says, you know, nothing's changed, it's exactly the same as it was when we first kind of put out a statement about this, people want answers. And I think that particularly in the age of social media, people sort of expect answers as well. They're kind of able to know a lot about what's going on all the time. And so they want to, they want those answers. And any bit of information or pictures or news is poured over. I mean, I keep coming across videos and posts which are, you know, coming out with all kinds of speculation about what's going on, and they grab onto absolutely anything or connecting the dots where they can't be connected.
Yeah. And of course, now with AI fakes and so on, people can produce imagery or video that suggests something that simply never happened. The final thing, though, is you say that real human interaction is a powerful antidote to online trolling. You've met people face to face. Now, some of them still hate you at the end of encounters and would threaten to kill you and so on. But others, you know, there is an understanding that kind of evolves.
Yeah, I think that there is something really valuable in being able to take some of this stuff offline and to have to meet people face to face. I'm a really strong believer in, you know, sitting in kind of behind the computer or on my phone or in my sort of ivory tower and not actually going out and about and meeting people and talking to them and confronting them. I think it's so worth coming face to face with people, because actually I often do find, although there are some people who continue to be abusive to me or to other people, there are quite a few people who, when you actually come face to face with them and you have a conversation and you say, right, okay, look, what's happened here, why, and you focus on the why rather than the what, really trying to understand why they've behaved in the way they have, people do tend to see you as a real person. And I think that's all the part of this, you know, people don't perceive what's going on as real life. They think what they post on social media isn't real life, when actually it does have a very serious real world impact. And, you know, I can't meet all the trolls, and so to some degree social media accountability and holding to account the people who are causing harm online is crucial from me as well, but meeting them sometimes does prove to be a positive thing.
Well, the endorsement from Ian Hislop on the cover of the book, full of unbelievable nonsense, which is the kind of endorsement you want for that kind of book. It's called Among the Trolls, My Journey Through Conspiracy Land. It's published by Atlantic Books, and its author, Mariana Spring. Thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.